All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from the Borough of Queens in New York City. It's the 26th day of April, 2023. And I'd like to remind you that I am the editor of a newsletter, Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. I think it's a good time to pay attention to my letter and others who write on the same topics of gold and silver and also the mining shares. So some very exciting new discoveries being made, multi-million ounce gold deposits, very large silver deposits that we're following that are being discovered as I speak. And I don't think the market's paying a heck of a lot of attention to those yet. And so I think it's time that you might want to pay attention. You can sign up for my newsletter by going to miningstocks.com, miningstocks.com. I've titled today's show, "This Will Not Be a Normal Recession." Michael Oliver is my guest today. Bloomberg's Simon White recently noted that the usual way for investors to prepare for recessions is to sell stocks and buy bonds. He's suggesting that U.S. Treasuries might not be the safety haven that it has proven to be in most other recessions. He's also suggesting that maybe equity markets won't be as painful a place to hide as it has in some recessions. I don't think he's saying we don't have further to go on the downside, but he believes that equities may not be punished as badly as they have been in some other cycles. On the other hand, he's very bullish, it seems, on gold and silver. He's noting that they've rallied and broken out even before we've entered a recession. Normally you go through a recession and the money printing begins and then they take off. But here they're taking off even before we enter into a recession. In fact, Simon is suggesting maybe the entire commodity complex might be a pretty good place to be in this recession. Sounds sort of strange. It isn't the way things usually go. Simon has his fundamental reasons, but I'm really happy to have Michael with me to provide his view from his technical point of view, OliverMSA.com. OliverMSA.com is where to go to sign up for Michael's excellent newsletter. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Good to be back, Jay.
You know, so this view that Simon White of Bloomberg has, U.S. Treasuries, I'm guessing you may be in agreement with him that U.S. Treasuries might not provide the same protection this time as they traditionally have. Are you good with that?
Yeah, I think they'll provide relative stability this year. Last year, remember, they got their clock cleaned. T-bonds started down. We got bearish in October 2020. By the way, that happened to be coincident with the upturn in commodities by our work. But bonds started down well before the stock market did. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the long-term government bonds. And by the time stocks peaked in late 2021, early 2022, bonds were, you know, really en route on the downside. Well, stocks joined in at that point, broke their annual momentum trend to negative, just as bonds had already done. But when you look at the bond price action, and where the low was last October, it was as low as it went back to the 2009 lows. Mm. Okay, it'd be like if the S&P had collapsed down to 1,500 or 1,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what bonds did. So from that point of view, last year was definitely not a place to be in bonds. It was not a, you know, the 60-40 balance didn't work out. The 40% bonds killed you, okay? But they've created enough technical stability, I think, to where we may have seen the low for a good while. Mm-hmm. That would be the low last October, meaning the high in yields on the long-term bonds. Two, we could get some rally in the bonds. We've gotten some off the October low, but it's stalled. Okay, it's got a ceiling on it. And it looks to me like it could actually engage and break out and go up. Now, but don't confuse that with a genuine uptrend. What it looks like to me is a major counter trend rally in bonds that could occur, counter to the longer term trend.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for a good chunk of this year anyway, they might in fact be stable enough to where the portfolio manager who's got some money parked in bonds says, oh boy, I'm glad I did that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he's going to make money, but it doesn't look like 2022 all over again.
Which right.
Is a lot. Okay. So it could become an alternative. The real alternative is going to be gold and related. There's no doubt in my mind.
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. It certainly seemed to be that gold is behaving differently than it has at this point in other credit cycles. And Simon White is pointing out that it may be essentially sniffing out, gold and silver may be sniffing out longer term inflation.
Yep.
Is that your view?
Yeah. And by inflation, what I mean is the broader sense of the word, that is monetary expansion.
Right.
Inflating the money supply. History shows that when the central banks inflate their money supply, it doesn't always go into commodities, which is mm-hmm. what most people normally think of as inflation. Quite often it goes into stocks, like it did from 2009 to 2021, when they pumped the pump, it was the stock market that got the benefit. Sevenfold increase S&P, 16-fold in TIPA and NASDAQ 100. Whereas commodities during that time languished.
Right.
But I do agree with Simon in regard to the commodities and gold. There is not a good linkage between commodity trends and gold.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, if you go back through history, you could find just as many times where they're totally out of sync. The late 70s, they were in sync. And mm-hmm. I think that's where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
But just for example, commodities hit a low in 2015, coincident with gold. But as gold made a low and actually turned up from it and sustained itself, commodities continued year by year to ratchet lower. They didn't make their low till mid to late 2020. Well, that's when gold had already doubled.
Right.
While the Bloomberg Commodity Index had been continuing ratcheting down, trading at what we call theoretically zero price level on mm-hmm. commodities. And it was then they exploded after gold had already doubled. So the correlation was not good for like 5 years there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when commodities exploded, gold was having a downside correction for the last 2 years. So they're out of sync. But I think right now our assessment of Bloomberg, which is a good broad commodity metric, it collapsed from its early 2022 high, which had
right.
been a doubling in price. It went from our buy level at 70, it went to 140. Okay. Which, by the way, historically is not very high.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and look at the Bloomberg in 2011, it was 175. In 2008, it was 237. Okay, so we only got to 140. So people said, oh, we get the biggest inflation in a decade. Change year over year, yes, but not in absolute levels. Okay.
Right.
Since then, in July of 2022, the Bloomberg dropped from that intra-month high at 140, high monthly close is like 131 or something, down to under 110.
Mm-hmm.
Not a big drop, but sharp for a few months. We're trading right now around 106.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like 10 months later, and we're only a few points below where we were last summer.
Uh-huh.
So the downside we're getting in commodities is really a trickle. We regard it as a correction. It looks like the Bloomberg is ready to re-engage to the upside again and so restart its longer term uptrend.
Right.
And that means at that point in time, though gold is re-engaged already,
mm-hmm.
16, 13 last September, and now we're trading 2000. Okay. Bloomberg looks like it's ready to turn back up again, in which case we could have a situation where Bloomberg does and gold do rise together now.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with him on that. I think that's mm-hmm. a reasonable expectation.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, I think probably Simon White would not use the same definition of inflation as you do, Michael. I'm guessing. You know, that they ignore the inflation of financial assets, which redistributes wealth to the people that are closest to the feeding trough of the United States government, taxpayers and so forth. But certainly, I mean, I'm old enough to remember quite well the 1970s when oil prices just went berserk and everything, actually. And the cost of living was going up dramatically for common folks, just as it is right now. It's probably worse now, potentially much worse. Certainly, we were in a position where monetary and monetary policies, at least, could be used in a major way to fix things. I don't think there's a greater doubt this time that Chairman Powell is going to be able to do much of anything long term, given the enormous amount of debt to GDP that we now have, that we're burdened with and our grandchildren are burdened with. But commodities, of course, there are all kinds of commodities. And I believe one of the things I really love about your service, Michael, is your momentum charts, which you always stack below your price charts. And that really helps people to understand, you know, I mean, usually momentum leads price, doesn't it? In most cases?
Usually when there's a trend change, you'll see momentum start to top out first or bottom first and engage in the new direction in a clear way before you can see the same evidence on the price chart. So usually momentum will lead a price chart trend change. So that's one major advantage of it. Also, during the process of a trend, when there are corrective moves, often the momentum will hint, hey, we're about to have a correction. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're ready for it. So it's our experience. It is an advantageous tool, and we've developed it in ways that a lot of momentum folks don't use it.
Yeah. And you've been just fantastic in terms of keeping me from jumping out of gold at various times when it would have really hurt me to do so, to be whipsawed in and out. It's sort of a steady, heady hand and very helpful to me, Michael. And so I noticed that it was in the weekend chart, I believe the Bloomberg Commodity Index that you talk about, one of the charts anyway, did indicate that the momentum has now broken out to the upside.
There was two metrics we're looking at. One is measuring price versus a 10-week average and oscillating it, not at the average itself, but at the structures that are built on the momentum chart. That has already broken out. Mm-hmm. We had a pullback last week, but 2 weeks ago it broke out over a pretty clear structure, meaning broke out through resistance, okay? Indicating new trend direction on that timescale. Putting it back in positive sync with the longer term annual momentum trend, which is in the correction. We're also watching 3-month average momentum. And we've got some numbers that if you can close out this month or next month, more likely, because there's only 4.5 trading days left in this month, that indicator is going to turn out and join the 10-week momentum. Both of them are going to say, yes, okay, intermediate trend is back to positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm suspecting we're going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
We've already seen one of the two indicators do it, and the other one looks like it's ripe to do. It wouldn't take a 2-point move out of Bloomberg to create that breakout.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. And then the question is, well, within the complex, the commodity complex, just like in the stock market, there's certain places that are better to be than others.
Right. Yeah.
You know, first time around, it was energy, you know, that explosion. Oil went up more, natural gas went up more than did, let's say, soybeans. This time around, I think it's probably going to be emphasized on the food side of the equation, which means hurtful.
Right. And
hurtful.
You know, and Michael, I noticed, I think it was last week sometime, you sent out a chart for DBA, the soft commodities, I mean, cocoa, sugar, cotton, grains, meats, that sort of thing.
Ag stuff, yeah.
Now, I believe that is an ETF that buys the contracts, right, in the futures markets.
Yeah.
And so it's one way that people who don't have the expertise or really want to go in and or have the capital that's required to get involved in the futures markets, this is one way they might look to play it. And what struck me was it looks like that sucker is sort of broken out on the upside. DBA, New York Stock Exchange, I guess, is where it trades.
The symbol is DBA, yeah. And that's it's a broad agricultural-based ETF. Doesn't deal in copper or silver or gold or oil and so forth. So it's food focused or ag focused. Sugar, for instance, right now is quite strong. In fact, we have our expectations on sugar is it might be among the strongest because It has both a price base and a momentum base that are just jaw-dropping in terms of the size of the base. The bigger the base, the bigger the building, you know. Okay. And sugar looks like, well, now we say, who cares? Well, sugar's, you know, incidental. No, it's not. You go down your grocery aisle, flip the boxes around, and look at ingredients. You'll see sugar just about on every one of them.
Yeah. So,
things like cocoa, you know, who cares? Well, but it's also going to be the grains. So anyway, yeah, I think that broad segmentation of the commodity complex, focusing on the foods and the ags, would be a place. And also stocks related to that.
Yeah.
You know, we stressed fertilizer companies back in the summer of 2020, before commodities even had quite hit their low. So we said, these look like they could just go berserk. Well, they were, multiples on the upside. Consolidated Industries, you know, et cetera, Mosaic. They went berserk percent-wise, food-related, and they joined with soybeans, corn, and wheat on the upside. That might be repeated, but we also focus in on some of the big grain, global grain companies that look like they might be a means of participation in this as well.
Yeah. Well, I noticed there were, I guess what I'd like to ask you, what about copper? And what about the base metals in general? I mean, if we're heading into a recession, generally speaking, you don't, you know, Dr. Copper is telling you, I don't know, Dr. Copper, what is telling us now?
Well, it's sort of in the middle ground. It's it looks positive to us. I don't think it's going to have the dynamics of gold and silver, period. I don't think any commodities will have the dynamics of silver, especially. I put it in the middle of the basket.
Okay.
The commodities arena. And, you know, it's got supply problems that could get worse and so forth and so on. And it's, even if you go into recession, it's an essential metal. Yeah, while the stock market goes down, I think copper doesn't necessarily have to.
Yeah.
Some people think it's you know, Professor Economics is Mr. Copper, you know,
right,
whatever is the direction of the economy. And I don't hold that.
You don't hold that view. Yeah. Well, one of the reasons I ask is I look at some of these major mining companies like Rio Tinto. So, you know, it's got a PE ratio of about 8.5. It's 14% dividend. You know, yeah, BHP, 14, I mean, an 8.14 PE ratio, 9% dividends. I mean, these are some of the healthiest base metal miners in the world, just really, really strong companies. I don't know if you track any of them at all or not, but it just seems to me that even if copper and, you know, zinc and lead and those things sort of hold their own, these companies, to the extent the inflation doesn't bite into their earnings, which I guess is probably not a safe assumption, but it would seem as though that might be a place where some people might want to put some of their capital. I don't know.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Freeport, McMoRan's, and other might mention you know,
right,
copper and gold.
Yes. Well, that has a gold component to it. That might be a good way to play it then. Yeah, and then maybe I just ask you about Bitcoin before we conclude here. Gold versus Bitcoin, you know, and of course you have the Peter Schiffs of this world that just go absolutely ballistic when you mention that Bitcoin might have any value at all. And, you know, as an objective analyst that you are, you let the charts tell you what's going on. But what are your thoughts in terms of Bitcoin and then maybe comparing it to gold?
Yeah. You know, the ads for Bitcoin that you used to hear a couple years ago as Bitcoin was going from under 10,000 to 70,000, you know, during 2021. By the way, I think silver could do that in a given year as well, that kind of percent move. But when it turned down into the 50,000s, especially the mid 40,000s, we turned major bearish. But we also ran a spread chart at that time between the relationship of gold and Bitcoin. And sure enough, the arguments that favored Bitcoin had been true, where you would get these ups in Bitcoin and then pullbacks against gold, but still in an uptrend, you know what I mean? So the spread was advancing favoring Bitcoin. But coincident with Bitcoin topping in net price, the spread also topped. And at that point, we put out a report and we said, okay, forget what you're hearing on the radio and TV about Bitcoin being better than gold. Not anymore. That was true. It's no longer true. And sure enough, what's happened since then, you know, gold's been at its all-time highs and Bitcoin is, you know, having a rally up to the high 20,000s right now.
Right.
Who would have thought when it was 70,000, you'd be getting a rally up into the upper 20,000s? But Bitcoin and Ethereum, we watch both of them, and they're pretty much in sync. They look real iffy right now. This rally took Bitcoin up to a resistance level that we expected it to engage, and it has engaged. Mm-hmm. That was either side of 30,000. And sure enough, for the last 4 weeks, it's been doing this once mm-hmm. it got to that level. Right, it was 27,000 as of Friday. It can't fool around much more. If it fools around into next month, it's likely going to roll over again. Yeah. Now, that might be coincident with a renewed stock market rollover.
Huh. Yeah.
Because it's been noticed, and fairly so, that Bitcoin and the stock market, they're fairly much in sync lately. Mm-hmm. That could continue for a while longer. Not ultimately, it doesn't have to, no. But it does, in fact, look like Bitcoin could be ready to roll over from this resistance. Had a nice rally, after all. It went from there, 15,000 to 30. Mm-hmm. So it's a big deal.
Right.
In hindsight, compared to 70,000, not a big deal. But it looks like it could roll over again. Yeah. And meaning remain an underperformer to gold still.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, it was one of the things that I took note of is that Bitcoin seemed to be trading more like a stock than as a hedge against.
Yeah.
Michael, appreciate it very much. Any last thought you would like to leave with our viewers?
No, I think if you're looking at gold, you really need to look at all four major asset categories, the foreign exchange market, the dollar, for example, which is weakening, and getting near some levels that could cause a precipitous drop, by the way. Okay.
In the dollar.
The dollar. Yeah. So watch it. That's obvious. But the correlation between the dollar and gold is not really that good either, by the way.
You know, that's true.
2015 through 2022, dollar was in a sideways range. Well, gold doubled. Gold didn't need the dollar to be weak. Mm-hmm. So it isn't always the case.
Right.
But it does look like it's about to engage to the downside. Now, I also think, and this is opposite to most gold bugs, when the stock market rolls over again, and we're looking for a rollover again, where it resumes its downtrend after this now 11 months of weightlifting. You know, go back to June to August rally last year, mm-hmm. split it in half. S&P's just been going sideways, really.
Mm-hmm.
Rallies that encourage and then it sells off. Rallies that encourage and it sells off. If it rolls back over and a sense of negativeness and desperation sets in again, I think the beneficiary is going to be gold. It's not going to hurt gold. I think it's going to help gold.
Mm.
So I think gold knows, and a lot of investors now know, if that market rolls over again, the Fed's going to definitely quit because the data points are going to follow the stock market and the Fed's going to go the other way. And gold knows that.
Yeah.
That's why gold has done what it's done.
Maybe it's sniffing that out already then, perhaps.
Yeah.
Maybe gold's strength is sniffing that out already.
Oh, yeah. No, I absolutely. That's why it had an unchanged year last year when most assets were down 20-30%.
Interesting. All right. Michael, thank you so much again for spending some time with us. It's OliverMSA.com, folks, OliverMSA. Michael puts out a ton of information, a lot of markets and somewhat obscure ones at that as well. Whenever there's some really important action in the markets, he lets his subscribers know. It's very good value, so I hope you all go there and check it out and sign up. Thank you, Michael, so much for being with us once again. All right, folks, well, that is it for this week. Until we meet again, goodbye and God's blessings to you.